Paul rose slowly from the crouch he'd folded himself into at some point in the proceedings. He goggled at the doorway to the kitchen, which was now a rough semicircle.
What on earth did that?
Implogren. Don't ask me how, because I don't know.
Christy was quickly working up a mighty head of anger toward the cowardly rail ghost. Before she could say anything more, a tall figure strode through what had been the kitchen doorway, followed at once by a second figure. Christy had already shifted her right hand to the long blaster's pistol grip. Now she let her forefinger rest lightly on the trigger. She didn't aim the blaster at the interlopers. Somebody had pulled that grin between Hole's feet. These two were the obvious candidates. The first and taller of the two new arrivals was a woman, as thin and taut as a wire sculpture, her face and hands tanned dark, her hair a blonde, scarcely darker than Jack's silver mane. It was caught in a long ponytail at the crown of her skull. She wore a silver cord around her temples, form-fitting white trousers and shirt beneath a loose, many-pocketed khaki vest. A heavy-duty web belt cinched around her impossibly narrow waist carried many objects in pouches and holsters whose purpose was unknown to Christy. Her face was so finely chiseled and haughty as to seem scarcely human. Christy was reminded of childhood tales of elves. Her companion was a lean man with dark brown hair receding from a vulpine face, dressed in blue jeans and a t-shirt tie-dyed in a riot of color, with a white oval in the center printed with the visage of a rotund, richly bearded man. Christy thought she recognized the image as the blessed Jerry Garcia, but she wasn't sure.
What took you so long?
The tall ice woman gave him a blue laser glare.
We have other things to do than redeem your poor judgment, Mark.
Paul. The name's Paul. See?
He held up the name tag, stitched in his coat.
Have it your way.
Outside, blaster shots cracked in a sudden ragged volley.
What's happening?
The newcomers ignored Christy.
What's going on out there, Brianna?
The Baron's daughter escaped when the mutants came for her in the night. She rallied homesteaders from the surrounding countryside. They're attacking now.
Well, thanks for saving us anyway.
You have much to answer for. This mutant band is known to have interfered with the folks' free passage in the past. Acting against them is acceptable and does not constitute interference in the outside world. But you've come deadly close to dragging us into the affairs of the mundanes, Paul.
Sorry, Bree. I didn't know. I just walked in here cold.
Flat-footed is more like it. Try to exercise more caution in future.
She regarded him a moment. Then her austere features seemed to soften ever so slightly. Or maybe it was a trick of the light. Or maybe the room's closeness and the reek of death was getting to Christy.
You're still chasing the armored train?
Yep.
Well, it went northeast. According to the locals, members of the crew spoke of heading for Cannes City.
Phew, that's a rough one.
Listen, you might not want to acknowledge my existence here, but there's something I have to know, Nuke Blastit.
The townsfolk saw three of your friends alive and well, Christy Roth. Only your Doc Tanner was missing. Perhaps he's having one of his spells and was restrained to keep him from harm. And perhaps the General did not wish to risk allowing all four outside at once.
Well, thanks. But how come everybody on the continent knows our names all of a sudden?
But again, Christy had phased out of existence for the gaunt blonde woman. A black man with a polished steel headband clamped over his medium-length afro appeared in the doorway. His eyes were covered by heavy, dark goggles that seemed to swim with muted colors like oil on water. He wore a camo blouse and OD cargo pants, and held a long blaster one-handed by a pistol grip. It appeared to be made from white plastic of some kind, and was a design unfamiliar to Christy. Brianna's mouth, none too generous to begin with, all but disappeared into a fine line. Christy had the impression the woman disapproved of her seeing the web.
We got a way out open. Best we take it.
Right, Newcomb. Hey, Paul.
Yeah?
Ride free.
Live to ride. Nationwide.
The trio left the way they had come. Christy heard the distinctive sound of a gasoline bomb going off not far away.
Let's go before this death house burns down around us, Paul.
Yeah, right.
Christy strode through the bright sunlight and noise. Shots cracked. Men on horseback hunted muties through the narrow, crooked streets of Tucumcari Newtown. Christy ignored them. The only thing bubbling more furiously inside her than her anger was way too many questions.
Who were those people?
A mutie with three mouths spread across his face pelted past them. Behind him, a woman turned and reared her big Palomino gelding and threw an axe after the fleeing mutie.
Come here, fuckface!
Not a hatchet, but a whole single-bit axe spun through the dust-impregnated air like a giant circular saw blade. It smacked between the mutie's shoulder blades and put him on his face into the dirt, so close to Christy he almost struck her with a flailing arm. An outflung hand scrabbled Hardpan dead in her path. She trod on it as if it were a tarantula without even looking and kept walking.
Technomads.
A crash erupted as a heavy chunk of concrete was hurled through a thin plywood window shutter. Then another molotail burst on the house they were approaching on their right. A figure burst out of the door, shrouded in flame and screaming wildly. It teetered and spun in front of them, arms waving flags of flame and a semaphore of intolerable pain. Christy stopped to let the burning mutie pass. He staggered on to vanish between buildings. Christy's set expression never flickered. Paul turned aside and puked. When he straightened, Christy had already marched a dozen steps toward the railroad tracks. Wiping his mustache on his sleeve, he trotted to catch up.
What's the matter with you? Are you triple crazy?
As an answer, she grabbed a handful of hair on the side of his head, stepped back, and yanked down hard.
Ow! Ow!
A teenaged Norm in a doorway 5 yards to their right touched off a replica Civil War Springfield. The black powder charge gave it up in a giant billow of dirty white smoke and a 4-foot spear of orange flame. The .577 caliber mini-ball howled as it passed through the space occupied by Paul's scrawny neck half a heartbeat before, on the way to pulverizing the left shoulder joint of a mutie charging in from the left with a spear made out of a broomstick tipped and edged with shards of broken glass.
What the hell's your problem?
Christy hauled him upright by the ponytail and towed him briefly after her like a sippy tugboat with a barge to make sure he got moving again and in the proper direction.
What the hell are technomads?
They're like a tribe, a nation more like. Bands of people who travel all the time. Some by road, some rail, some water, some other ways.
They were at the southern edge of town, having left the massacre behind. Not all the erstwhile participants, however. A mutie was sitting in the driver's seat of the Paul Yawl, pressing frantically and futilely on the pedals with long two-toed feet. Paul having repeated the trick that had frustrated Christie's initial attempt to make it go, simply a matter of leaving it in the highest gear. Caught in the grip of ultimate panic, the mutie didn't really notice he was having no effect. He just kept pushing harder until the quads threatened to pop out the black rubbery skin of his bare legs. Christy pointed the long blaster at him one-handed. Black flesh, skin strips, and liquid spewed out the far side of the panicked mutie. He threw up his hands, emitted a dismal croak, and toppled over under the cinders.
Oh, look! Look there! You got blood on my yawl!
Shut up!
Christy planted her butt on her own seat. As Paul scrambled into his, forcing himself to ignore the ooze and odd bit of tissue clinging to the mesh, three more muties pelted desperately toward the yawl. They were unarmed, stretching out various empty appendages in supplication. Christy mowed them down with the rest of the rounds in her 30-round mag. Paul used the twist grip mounted on his handhold to downshift, then began to pedal the yawl. Christy dropped the empty box, reflexively tucked it into a pocket of her jumpsuit, and pushed a fresh mag home. Then, still cradling the M16 in case anybody else got notions of riding without a ticket, she put her feet up on the pedals and added the power of her strong, shapely legs to Paul's wiry, skinny ones. A shift of the wind blew a bloated worm of brownish smoke across the track ahead. They drove through it without slowing and gathered speed. When they were 100 yards past the smoke, Christy saw a figure appear out of it beside the tracks. Paul saw her eyes narrowed and turned, fearful at what he'd see.
It wasn't anything he expected, that was sure. A young woman with long hair streaming from her head like a raven's outstretched wing had reined in a big bay horse. The horse was bareback, and so was she. Aside from what looked at this range like a pair of lumberjack boots, she was naked. She reared the horse and waved, of all things, an FNFAL long blaster over her head.
Godspeed! And bring Jack Lauren back safe!
Lordy. Baron Mike's little daughter, Maria Elena, has done a mite of growing since last I laid eyes on her.
She seems to know how to rally troops.
Shit. I'm rallied right now.
Just get us out of here, Paul.
The nude rider turned and vanished into the smoke again with a last Comanche whoop. Christy found herself almost wishing she might make it back this way someday to see how the Ville fared under its new baron. Life wouldn't be dull, she was sure. That was triple silly even to think, she chided herself savagely. Her path led right out of this life. Her itinerary left no room for doubling back, much less sightseeing. She swung her eyes onto Paul, like guns tracking in a mount.
You were a lot of help back in the Baron's house.
I told you at the outset, I'm no fighter. I avoid trouble when I can. When I can't...
I fight when I have to.
Which is probably all the time, am I right? Tell me something. How much misery have you left in your wake, Christy Roth? Plenty more than I have, I bet. What I do is I try to move through life, leaving as little of a mark as possible. Just go with the flow, like moving through water.
No matter what marks you make in water, they're instantly gone as if they'd never been.
And is that how you see people, Christy Roth? Like drops of water emerging facelessly into a stream, without individuality or meaning?
I guess I do, now. Except a few drops of water still hold meaning for me. And that's how it's going to be until it's my turn to become one with the river.
Deathlands is insanity, Christy. And it sounds like you enjoy being an inmate in the asylum. Me? I can sleep at night, knowing I'm not part of the madness.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.